You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Sword Art Online After Show.
Hey there, AfterBuzz fans. We are here to talk about another set of episodes from Sword Art Online, episodes 17 and 18, The Captive Queen and To the World Tree. How are you guys doing today? Joining me on the panel today is Katie Cullen.
I'm a little distraught.
Liz Rishmawi.
Hey guys, good to be back.
Yes, you're Yay, here. You're finally Yay. Back. We're so happy. And Tari Miller.
Sorry, Rishina.
He's Yay. Not as distraught as I am.
And you're back to your Japanese phrases. Last week it was
Darn
just insert Japanese phrase. And joining us, we have a very, very special guest today. I cannot tell you guys how excited I am to have Jeremy Lee in the studio with us today, aka the voice of Asuna.
Yeah.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
So, yes, guys, we got a lot to talk about. We got to get through these episodes, and we also want to talk to Jeremy because, OMG, guys, we have Jeremy Lee in the studio today.
OMG. Yes, we do.
Yay! So let's go ahead and just jump into these episode recaps, and then hopefully we can get through these quickly so we have more time to talk to you.
Great.
So let's go ahead and pick it up with episode 17, The Captive Queen, which we pick up right where we left off last week. Kirito right at home. He's like, yay, I get to fight some noobs. You know, it's Tuesday. And he basically tears through these guys because, again, he has such a high skill set left over from SAO.
Right.
And he takes out two of them. And the other guy is like, well,
peace, I'm out.
I love where my stats are at right now. I'd rather not die, so I'll see you guys later.
Yeah.
I'm just going to see myself out of this scene.
Which makes me wonder if death doesn't cause a stats reset.
It probably does.
It does. Yeah, it's kind of like when you're in the middle of probably a quest or something, and if you don't save at the save point, then you have to start it all over again.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, that he was like, I have no desire to lose all that hard work, so I'm going to go. And so that's when we have a moment between Leafa and Kirito, and she's like, well, thanks for stepping in. I could have taken care of it myself, but let me buy you a drink to say thank you. And he's like, oh, this is great, because I have somebody who has been in this game for a while who can give me information about, you know, the world that I just jumped into without bothering to go to Wikipedia to research. I'm just wondering, because he has such a limited time frame, you think he could have just hopped onto the internet, because the game has been out for a year and just done
doesn't exist.
Yeah, but
bitch of
research. Would that have been as exciting?
No, probably
but we
not.
Would have yelled at less.
This is true.
Oh, you picked a race that has zero magic that will help you with anything you do. Congratulations.
Well done.
A Google search would have.
Or whatever search engine they have in 2025.
Yeah.
Moogle. Wait, that's also trademarked. Well, you know, anime do all the off-brand
it's
things.
Ding.
We have Whack Donald and whatnot.
Ding instead of
Ding. It's called Ding.
I love that you explained that just now. Thank you.
It is Ding. Let's
again,
be real.
Again, you changed the letter instead of Ding.
I got it. Nothing gets by me.
Well, you know, for...
Anyway, so they go to the tavern and they start talking a little bit about this world. And, oh, actually, first I skipped a scene. Sorry about that. She teaches him how to fly without the little Wiimote, and it's this cute little Wiimote thing.
It
I don't
really
know why
is.
You need to get rid of it, but she's a natural at this game, and she's been at it for a year, as we'll find out because the game has been out for a year, and she manages to teach Kirito how to do it, which is basically like a mind over matter. You just have to imagine yourself with wings.
Right.
And he picks up on that relatively quickly, although as we've seen, he's not super great at landing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just stop flying, right?
It reminded me of when I tried to play Halo anytime. I'd talk so much smack, but I'd be the person blowing myself up with a bazooka because I was facing the wrong direction.
The first time I played a Halo match, it was Halo 2, I kept staring at the ground, and my older brother, actually, he's like, I'm right here. I'm right here, and I'm like, where?
Oh, totally.
How many joysticks do you need for this game?
That's how it was with Borderlands. When you try to move, it's like, if it's too sensitive, you're like, okay, I've just done a flip. I just wanted to look up. Yeah. It's so hard.
That's right, because you were a character in Borderlands.
Yeah, so that's when I was trying to play it, and my brother, like, totally took me down.
It's not fair, and they get so much more practice in. Anytime I go home to play games with my brother now, like, they wipe the floor with me, because I just don't have time to play anymore.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
It's like, I'm going to teach you how to play. Is this how you teach people?
Yeah. By making them lose?
Do not get your degree in education.
Yeah, you're a horrible teacher.
Yeah.
This is how you suck, so don't do that.
I'm showing you all of what not to do.
Trial by fire, guys.
Trial by fire. The only thing I know is that the white button throws a grenade. How am I supposed to know? It might be the black button. I don't remember it.
Before we move on, I am curious. Are you a big fan of online gaming, or is it just kind of like just whenever you have time, you can pick up a game?
Yeah, totally. I love to play games. It's so hard, though, because, like, my brother is great at gaming. My husband is really great at gaming. So I enjoy it. But playing it with them, it's like I just watch my self-esteem in gaming just, like, fall through the floor. So
yeah.
I normally would have to invest enough time that I feel like I could be pretty decent so that when I play with them, it's a little more enjoyable.
You have to go through, like, covert training sessions.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you pick up anything
new. Like, when
new.
They go to sleep, it's like, okay, now I can play.
Play with us. We'll all be terrible
See,
together.
See, I love this.
Yeah. I used to be like that when the new Mario Kart 8 came out, and I sucked at Rainbow Road. I sucked so hard.
Like everyone else on the planet?
Then I got so good at it. And one of my exes at the time, we were together, and I kept beating him mercilessly, and it was just the most...
Very gratifying.
Beautiful, perfect one of my, thing.
People who are good at Rainbow Road are people who should not be messed with.
Yeah.
Very true.
Dangerous.
Anyway, because we've got a little bit of a time limit, let's go ahead and get back. After, you know, we add another tally to the times that Kirito lands on his face in this game.
Shot.
The Sword Art Online drinking
the
game.
The Sword Art Online drinking
to
game.
To be very fun.
Every time Kirito experiences cranial trauma.
Anyway, so they go down to the tavern, and Leafa is explaining a lot about the world and about the different races and how Kirito really is a noob at this. He doesn't understand anything about the aspects of this game and about the different kind of turf wars going on because there are 9 races of elves. And you know, God forbid you go into one area, they can attack you, but you can't attack them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all these rules, and she basically explains kind of the overall plot of the game as well, is to get to the top of the World Tree, where Oberon the Fairy King is supposed to be able to grant you the ability to fly for as long as you want, instead of having a 10-minute time limit.
Yeah. Right.
Which, apparently, since being able to fly is, like, the biggest addicting aspect of this game, being able to fly without a time limit is like the end all be all of this game. Which, not gonna lie, it does sound pretty cool.
I was gonna say, it does sound pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can understand why people would invest a lot of hours into this game if it really does. I personally, if I was stuck in Sword Art Online and then Alfheim came out, I wouldn't touch it.
No,
exactly.
But I can understand why people who are currently playing would want to keep playing.
Yeah. Totally.
I would still never touch it.
But you're like, oh, I almost died before. I should totally do this again.
But they would have had to start playing while people will while people were still in comas in Sword Art Online.
Yeah.
Well, these 10,000 people are dying rapidly
but
and
for
still
me,
stuck
it'll
in comas.
Be better.
We have a new game.
Where they encourage player killing, which we were talking about it last week, seems like a big faux pas, all things considered.
Well, if they die in the game, they die for real. If you die in the game, it's a stat reset. Much better.
I wanted to know how the marketing worked for that. Like, think about how they were like promoting that game to have. It's like, let's forget about all these people in a coma right
same
now.
Program,
this is fun.
Same program, different company. Even though they just picked up on everything else, and you
they
know,
they
headset
stressed
security.
Yeah, they stressed higher security. But
no,
it's just,
I don't know.
But if the call is already coming from inside the house, exactly. Your security.
I don't know about that.
Help.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But basically, Leafa also explains that the end-all be-all of this quest is basically unwinnable because it would require that the nine races work together.
Exactly.
Whereas only one team is going to get the grand prize.
Wasn't it Kirito who was the one who brought that up?
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you're very clever because, again, he's pretty sharp.
Yeah.
He's new, but he's pretty sharp.
But he's got it.
But no one's ever going to team up because it's like, oh, well, all the Spriggans get to have the flight thing, but all you other people, you're hosed.
Yeah.
I don't care that you came with him. You're hosed.
Yeah.
Just this guy.
Yeah.
So basically, the idea of these groups working together is it's basically not going to happen, or it's very inconceivable that it would happen anytime soon.
Right.
And so people are like, okay, well, maybe it's a missing quest. And so people are out looking for it, but we still don't really know if it is a missing quest, what that would be or what that would entail. Mm-hmm. And Kirito's on a time limit. Mm-hmm. And he explains to her, he's like, I need to get there now.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't tell her why. He's just like, I need to get there. And he's like, thanks for your help, and decides to leave. And she's like, well, wait, you're going by yourself? And he's like, yep, I don't need to get anybody involved in it because I'm the Black Swordsman. He didn't say that.
People die around
me. I mean, I'm kind of awesome.
Yeah. I'm kind of, you might not have heard of me. I'm kind of a big deal.
I have a show about me,
I'm a noob beater.
Pretty much.
No, just a cheater this time.
Yeah, he's just a cheater this time around. And she's like, well, how are you going to get there? Do you know anything about this world? Do you even know how to get to the World Tree? And basically, she's like, I've made up my mind. I'm going with you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. I don't think he likes the idea of anybody else getting involved in this very personal matter, but he's completely at a loss because he didn't go to Google and bother to learn anything, didn't watch any Let's Plays or anything.
Didn't
like that.
Download a strategy guide
no one who was in the games before, like Agil or anybody, is playing currently. And I'm
exactly.
sure they're
those not
would be
dumb
different.
Enough to come back in.
Yeah. Right.
Right. They value their life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Klein's over getting a pizza, picking up girls.
Hanging out with her. No, seriously.
Swordsmanship.
Curry pizza and a ginger ale.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So basically, they agree to meet up the following day, and that's when we get our big reveal that Leafa is actually his little sister, Sugu.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we could see it coming.
Your brother's in a coma, and you're dumb enough to pick up the game.
We'll get into that at the beginning of the next episode, because we get her explanation as to why and everything like that.
Oh, I understand her reasoning. She's still an idiot.
mean the person who has a crush on somebody that she was raised together with as her brother, even though they technically are still blood related because they're cousins, and you don't think that she has
super
any sort of
gross.
Understand her reasoning. She's still an idiot.
Yeah.
So. Super gross. And that's the kind of irksome thing. Just as somebody who has brothers and somebody who has a lot of cousins, I would have really liked to see this series if there wasn't this need for dramatic irony. If they just forget her having a crush on her cousin, forget them not knowing who each other is, if they knew who they were and they were able to work together and be able to play off each other in that really comedic way, I think it would have added a lot to this series. I don't think there's the need for this dramatic irony.
Yeah, all this other dramatic stuff going on, and I don't think we need the other creepy level of siblings. Because I don't care if they're still cousins. The fact that he knew the whole time, but she didn't know until very, very recently that he was just her cousin. So why all of a sudden is this like year old like revelation, like, make it acceptable or okay?
Honestly, she was probably crushing on him while she thought he was her brother.
It's like a Greek tragedy.
Yeah.
You know? I'm telling you, we could do this whole series without the Lannister aspect, but no.
But I do think that would have added a lot to this series. But, you know, we're not here to talk about what if. We are here to talk about what is. And speaking of creepy,
I need to put a trigger warning on this next part because this is borderline sexual abuse going on here. So if that bothers you, you may want to skip like the next 5 minutes of the video.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So the next reveal that we get is we cut to the World Tree, and we see where Asuna is, and we do get confirmation that it is in fact Asuna.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that and we get introduced to Oberon the Fairy King, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Nobuyuki, if I could talk, Sugo. Which,
what does he call her?
Titania, because he's Oberon the Fairy King. That's so very right. For all of you who remember your Shakespeare from back in the day, you know, that's kind of a reference to that as well, and you know, just fairy lore and everything like that. And it's kind of interesting that they just went ahead and right off the bat just didn't bother with the kind of who is this man like they did with the first arc in terms of like where is Akihiko Kayaba. They just dive right in. It's like, you know that guy that you knew was the bad guy in, you know, two episodes ago? He's the bad guy.
In case your suspicions were like waning. No, you're right.
Boring. I think I'm glad that they did that, because I think it would have been annoying to just have the exact same thing happen from what happened in the first series.
Right. Well, that's true. Opening theme gives it away.
Yeah, when you have their reflections in the mirror and everything.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a surprise to Kirito. It's not to the audience. Yeah. That's difference. True. It's dramatic irony instead of an overall surprise.
Yeah, again, more dramatic irony that I don't think we really need, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But basically, we find out that he has this very mustache twirly, very interesting plan. Because we know that control of the SAO server went to the company that he does R&D for. Mm-hmm. And when everybody got out of SAO, he happened to grab 300 people for this kind of
experiment.
Yeah, experiment.
Scientist plot.
Brainwashing.
What a great guy.
Super great.
And it's super
great.
Super illegal.
I mean,
holy cow, so illegal.
Yeah.
Which is, on the one hand, it's very interesting, just the whole concept of, you know, how would you feel if you were somebody in SAO and you're like, I get to go home. Where am I?
No, not yet.
And now I'm in birdcage. This sucks.
This
is not home.
Yeah.
It's the worst game ever. Yeah. Actually, we did have a fan pose a question to the panel as a whole on YouTube. They wanted to know, guys, choice, if you had to be stuck in SAO or Alfheim Online, which would you choose?
Alfheim Online.
Because you get to fly.
Yeah. And I would feel like a god. Like, because I can kill people, I can die. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Well, I think it also... If you're stuck in Alfheim, there's probably someone screwing with your memories up top. Because the only people who are stuck are the people who are leftovers from SAO that this guy decided he would just...
I'd rather my brain be screwed with than to, like, die.
Yeah.
Because there's a chance that somebody is going to go in and rescue everybody, and, like, it did in SAO, but at the same time, I won't die.
I'm going to stick around in SAO, and I'm going to hang out in the Town of Beginnings, and...
I would like to fly. Well, then you have to deal with the Einkrad Liberation Army and those guys are jerks. Those guys that shake down orphans in their spare time.
The guy up at the top going, I can make you do whatever I want.
That's a guy with a complex.
Yeah, I will say, as much as I would like to fly in Alfheim Online, I kind of prefer Kayaba Akihiko because, you know, if you didn't mess with him, he'd leave you alone.
True.
Yeah. So, I think I'd probably, as much fun as it would be to fly, I think I'd probably pick SAO.
Anybody else groan? I mean, again, I wasn't here last week, but did anybody else groan when he picked the same username?
Way to broadcast your presence.
Right, yeah. Especially since...
And he thought about it, too. Yeah. There was that moment.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
When, Bob.
Sugo knows who he is, and he runs the whole thing. Like, why would you choose the same name?
Yeah.
Unless you're specifically trying to make a statement, like, I'm coming for you, man.
But it's just,
dumb boys.
It's just, my name isn't taken on the server, and it's the one I always use. Okay,
done.
You know.
But I don't know.
Boys are dumb.
Boys.
Shonen protagonists
well,
are
and
dumb.
It was an immediate red flag. I know we talked about it last week, but he...
You wouldn't do this.
It was an immediate flag last week, red flag last week, and I know we talked about it, but when he dropped into neutral territory instead of Spriggan territory, that made me immediately go, well, shoot, the guy knows that he's in the game. But then later on in these two episodes, he says, you know, I bet Kirito will be too scared to ever put on the nerve gear again. Yeah. I don't know if he's saying that just for Asuna?
Yeah.
To try to scare her?
I think he's just messing with her.
I think that makes sense. I don't think so. I think it was a glitch
because of all the SAO information
stuff
that's tied to his nerve gear.
And what's her name in the pocket?
Yui.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be.
I think it was just... because of the glitches and stuff, and he had all this old information and everything. So
that's true. It could go either way, but after hearing this guy say that Kirito would probably be too scared to ever put the nerve gear on again, that made me go, oh wait, does he not know that Kirito is playing the game right now? Because if Sugo doesn't know, then Kirito does have the element of surprise, which. Right. He probably doesn't deserve because he used the same username.
You would think that Sugo would put some sort of trace or something on that name, so if anyone ever took it, he'd get the notification and go, like, oh, that guy.
Like he gets a text message.
But he's an incredibly narcissistic, sociopathic. I mean, he probably thinks he has the trump card no matter what, so why even bother doing that? He'll face it when he gets there because he has all the power. So.
He kind of does. He's a sysadmin.
Yeah, that's true. He's the system admin. And so that's kind of where we leave off with this episode, is him basically saying to Asuna, you know, basically comply or I will start messing with your brain because I have that technology, apparently. It's 2025, I'm not gonna question it.
Yeah. Be a little more submissive next time.
So
with the ribbon, was that in
that
episode?
Yes.
That was messed up. I hate that.
Hate it.
Yeah.
And before this episode we started taping, we were talking about how Asuna's character was originally very shy, timid, and she basically, you know, we saw her as a character build in the first season, and now in this season, now she's reverted back because she doesn't have that hope that Kirito is around. And, you know, good point, but obviously as 75% of us on the panel are women, and Tari is a good person.
He's a feminist.
And Tari is smart.
Just the entire concept behind this character, like, again, when we were joking, like, we'd rather have Kayabe.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it makes me angry to watch her just sit there and take it. Like, it just, we'll get to it more.
When we get to more of the interview portion, but I know that you've, Sharami, you've referred to Asuna as a character with a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
And as such, it is infuriating as a viewer, you know, regardless of whether you're male or female, because my little brother was complaining about this too. It's infuriating just as a viewer to see somebody with this much integrity, who is as strong as she is, put in this situation. It's maddening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's like, I remember when I was watching it before I would go in to voice it, I'm like, oh, please just get out of here. Like, this sucks. This just sucks. Please. I know you can. Like, why this is going to suck to play? She's just, like, trapped in a box.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I really wish someone would just, like, slip her a sword. Because if she had a sword in her hand, nobody would be able to stand in her way.
You can use your hands as weapons. We've established this. Kirito put his hand through someone's chest last time.
That's true. That's true. Ugh. But yeah, it's very.
We also don't know if she has. She probably does not have all her stats from the last game.
Yeah, well, she probably doesn't get.
And I think like ultimately the way I was like rationalizing when we were working on it is I thought, well, if I was in this situation and this guy says he's going to mess with my brain, I really have one chance to get out of here because if he catches me. And I do, then I'm not getting out.
Yeah, or worse, he does, like, tap into her brain and, like, causes her to do things that
she doesn't want to do.
And then she's not going to be aware that it's happening.
And I feel like, for me as a female, it's like, that's, like, my brain, that's, no, don't mess with that.
Yeah.
Like, so I think she's probably, like, at least as long as I'm here and I'm playing along just being in this room, I can get it all together and prepare for that one exit and know that I'm never coming back to this.
Yeah.
So that was the only way I could rationalize, why is she just sitting there? Because she could get out. I'm like, she's probably, like, I need to bide my time and make sure that I don't screw up my chance by jumping the gun.
Yeah. And exactly. And we actually do see in this next episode that she is forming a plan. She,
does lay out a line to him in what she says to him in the next episode as well, where I don't know if I'm jumping ahead too much at this point.
But, it's okay.
Might as well.
Basically, you know, when she says, you know, I don't care that this is, you know, he's saying, oh, what's the big deal? It's not in your real body, this and that. And she's like, you will never have me. You will never have, I don't care if it's my virtual body, my real body, like, you will not take that from me.
Yeah, any part of me.
And knowing that, like, that made me feel a little better over the last several episodes of what I've had to deal with watching this. And it made me, like, it reestablished some of the trust and faith I had in her as a character.
Yeah. And as frustrating as it is from a plot perspective, because she has become a plot device as opposed to a character, it is at least nice to see that she is still who she is,
yes. Right.
All things right. considered. That even though the plot is not doing her any service, she is doing everything within her, you know, within the very little that she can do yes. in this situation. She is doing everything she can.
And it might be also because in the last episode when he was saying that he met Kirito, I always forget Kirito's real name now.
Kazuto.
Yeah. But just the way... Gesundheit.
Everything at once. God bless you.
But just the way, like, I guess maybe mentioning that she had met him to know that he was still alive, to know yes. that he was out there, even though he's saying, oh, he won't have the courage to get in here, like, I think that gave her hope, too. Like, he's
absolutely.
Still alive.
Yeah,
he's
because save me. Prior to that, you know, she was holding on to the hope that he would come into the game. But
didn't know if he was alive.
But there's nothing for her to yeah. go on. Yeah,
right.
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she does get validation in this next episode that he is, in fact, alive.
Yes.
But anyway, really quick, before we get into the next episode, I want to talk to you guys really quick about iTunes. Guys, if you like what we do here at AfterBuzz, go to iTunes, slap us with a 5-star rating, leave a comment. Leave a comment on the YouTube page. We love reading our YouTube commenters,
yeah.
even though you're a bunch of sadists who are like, ooh, I can't wait for you to get to this episode.
We love you. Wait till you find out who Leifa is.
Right.
Oh, we know.
Yeah.
We love you guys. You guys are awesome. And by going to iTunes and leaving a comment, leaving a rating, it lets our bosses know that we're doing a good job and that you like the content that we're producing here at AfterBuzz. So
that's
thank
how
you guys.
Get awesome guests like
exactly.
Thank you.
So. Exactly. So thank you guys so much for your support. Keep doing what you're doing because we can keep doing what we're doing too.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys. So let's go ahead and jump into the next episode, episode 18, To the World Tree. And it opens with us getting an explanation from Sugu as to why she did become a gamer. Because mm-hmm. personally, again, you know, all things considered, as terrible of a faux pas as it is putting out an online game while 10,000 people are trapped in the virtual world.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Pretty much. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, microwave. So, like, the death toll is constantly going every
right.
single
yeah.
day. We find out from her why she likes being a gamer. And at first, she used to hate it. She straight up says, I used to resent it because it took my brother away. Mm-hmm. But after a while, she got curious. She was like, well, what is it that attracted him to this type of thing in the first place? And she tries it out. And after a little while, she grew to love it because you get to fly and it was so much. And I guess, you know, because you have magic and everything, too,
yeah.
that it's
yeah,
addicting totally. And it's fun.
Yeah.
And death is not permanent.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a big one.
That's nice.
That's yeah. a big plus.
Yeah.
And so we do get that. And then we get the next bit is we get her in real life again.
That's
and
cool.
we meet up with her friend Rekkon, who is actually her in real life classmate. Nagata? I think it's Nagata.
Nagata.
Yeah.
yeah.
God bless
okay.
you.
and he's talking to her. He's like, hey, the party's gonna go do this, and she's like, yeah, I'm not gonna be hanging out with them for a bit.
I keep calling him Melvin. he just needs the giant swirly glasses and just to be just like just all that much more annoying and pop up when you don't want him to.
Well,
could
I
be worse,
felt
could
really
be Milhouse.
I felt really bad. Aw. Everything's coming up Milhouse.
No,
not in this episode. I hope things improve for him because actually I really didn't like Sugu in this scene because you know, we've seen animes before where one character hits another one and it's hilarious and it's like over the top and dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But when she hits him because he's, you know, talking to her about how she doesn't know this guy and, you know, and it's very clear he has a crush on her, she hits him with her kendo sword in the stomach and he drops to the ground. I'm like, why would you stay friends with this girl?
That's hostile.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an abusive relationship.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Is something that is not cool.
That is,
honestly,
that is bullying your friends.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
And
especially when she's got a sword.
And
yeah.
he's got a good point because meeting guys online is always risky.
Yes.
I don't care if it's virtual reality. It's still kind of...
All right, Mom.
Yeah.
No,
I'm just saying, there is an inherent risk. There's no excuse for him acting like she's property or like, well, you're mine to protect. No, not true.
Yes.
But
nobody's right.
Nobody's right in this scene.
Right.
And
everyone
so
is wrong.
It makes it very frustrating because it's like, come on, you have no reason to overreact like that.
Yeah.
But he also, and I think it's part of him just being nervous because he's got this giant crush on her.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's just frustrating.
Make it better.
No, right. It really doesn't.
But like,
he's in high
wrong.
School. I mean, he's like a teenager. He doesn't phrase things well. He's just kind of trying to show that he cares and he doesn't want her to die.
And he's not being creepy.
No,
which is a nice change.
Yeah.
He is an improvement over a lot of the guys that we see in this series. But anyway, so we get her going back into the virtual world, and they Kirito and Leafa meet up at the tavern. And they kind of begin to, before they decide to go out on their adventure, they decide some that they weapons. Need to go and buy more stuff. And we get more guilt politics when she's confronted by her party members.
Can I just say real quick, why did she giggle when she looked at his back and there's like a giant sword and she's like, uh-huh, and I'm like, what's funny about that? The scene confused me.
It was as big as his body. Like, it was this giant thing.
No, I know, it's just anyway, go on.
Well, it could be that because she is a kendo champion, that any kind of overly ornate swords that's just funny.
Sense, I'm expecting Suga to make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
You make an excellent point. Anyway, so she's they're confronted by these former party members, and it reminded me a lot of when Kirito was confronted by the Knights of the Blood Oath. Mm-hmm. Only that made sense because it was this big. It was an evil plan, you know, from Kayaba Akihiko. It was his evil plan. But even if that wasn't the case, because it was a life and death game, there were a lot of politics going on. So it made sense, someone being the second in command of the guild, not necessarily wanting her to be able to leave.
Yes.
So it made sense. This doesn't really make much sense. This just kind of seems like gamers being petty.
Yeah.
I don't really get it.
This guy who's in charge of it legit says, well, I know I said you could leave at any time, but you can't leave.
Yeah. And I do.
I know what I said. It's not what I meant.
I really love how Kirito steps in, though, the way he says it. Like, she's not property. She's not your weapon. She's not your item. She's not a shield. You know, like, she, you know, you can't choose or pick and choose when to use her, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was great. And I think that was a lot of character growth on Kirito's part, too, because I feel like in the beginning of the first season, I feel like if that whole thing was to happen, that he might have stayed out of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's something with him stepping in because he grew, you know, to, you know, love Asuna and stuff like that. It's something he's like, hey, she's a girl.
Women are people.
Yeah.
Who
knew?
This is not a series that believes in that.
Yeah. And then stuff's about to go down, and then the other guys are like, this is going to make us look really bad in front of all these people. And I find it interesting she's the only character that has, like, not green hair.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, too, because supposedly your appearance is created at random.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not only does she look different from most of the other elves in her race, but she's also the one featured on the poster. So I guess you luck out. You're hey, I get to be the cool one.
Super convenient.
That one.
Your cup size is the same as it is in real life.
She's very busty.
I wouldn't mind so much if they didn't do the loving pan every time.
They do love their close-ups on that, don't
they? This is not a series that thinks women are people.
Listen, Japan loves pan.
I don't care. It's still messed up.
Anyway, yeah, I know. We could go on forever about that, but guys, we are on limited time. So anyway, we get this kind of scene where she and Kirito go off together, and they're talking to Yui when all of a sudden Retcon comes.
Reckon.
I keep wanting to call him Recon, but that's not right. It's Reckon. And he comes.
I reckon.
There we go. That's a good way to remember it. But he comes up and he's like, hey, I want to go with you, but obviously some weird stuff is going on with the guild, so I'm going to stay with them, but I'm like your double agent.
Real quick, we should probably cut this short. We have 10
minutes. I know. Okay, so basically cutting forward, we had that scene that we were discussing earlier. With Asuna and Sugo, and during which, apart from him just being "muhaha, I'm evil," she looks in the reflection of the mirror and sees the code
because
that he
types
in.
Because when she looks directly at it, there's like a filter where
it's
gets blurred.
Yep. Yeah.
And then she was smart enough to know that the filter didn't exist through the mirror.
Yep. Exactly.
Right. So that was awesome.
So she now has the code to get out.
Yeah.
And she knows that Kirito is alive.
Yes.
And so that's the good thing to take away from that.
Yes.
And to go back to our heroes as on their quest, they're on their way to the World Tree, and they're farther than she's ever gone before. And they're going to go through the mines of Moria to get to the World Tree. But someone's got a trace on them, and it looks like it's the guy who escaped from the Salamander race.
The red guy.
And so he's tailing them.
Yep.
So anyway, that basically wraps it up for this episode. Let's spend the rest of our time talking to our wonderful, wonderful guest.
Yay!
Yay.
Pressure.
Yay.
Pressure. Pressure. I know. I'm feeling an immense amount of pressure.
Be interesting. Now go. I
know. She already is.
And she shuts down.
I know.
I don't know. So since you've been doing a lot of you've been doing voice acting for a while, yeah. What was the audition process for Sword Art Online? Or was that one where they just called you up because they're like, we think you would be perfect for this role?
No. I mean, I guess that happens for some people, but I haven't had anyone be like, hey, we think you'd be really great for this role. Just come show up. I've had to audition for everything. For Sword Art Online, that was the first show that I ended up working on in L.A. because I had previously worked with Funimation in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So they called and had me come in and read, and I read for three characters. And I was pretty familiar with the show. I'd seen like two episodes and then stopped because I thought if I get too invested and then
the opportunity comes to audition, I don't know.
I went and auditioned for the show, and then they called me back for Asana, and then I ended up getting cast, and it was awesome, and also terrifying.
Can you tell us which other characters were the other ones you read for?
Yeah, I read for Lisbeth and Yulia.
Okay.
Yulia.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. We actually had Amanda C. Miller, who did the voice of Yulia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
There you go.
She's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So once you got the part, did you do anything in particular to get into character? Any vocal exercises or anything to kind of help you get into that state of mind?
No, I mean, I would watch at least a portion of the show before I went in to record until I had finished it. Obviously, I ended up binge watching the first season because it was like, okay, I'll just watch another one. Then it had been like 8 hours.
And then before you know it, you're through the season.
And then I had to take a bit of a break when, you know, the episode that occurred that we all know happened, and I was really upset. And then I was like, oh, okay, we do have to dub the rest of it, so I do need to get back in and start watching it again. And so then it took a little while where I was like, oh, it's happening. I was very frustrated, and that's kind of where we're at in the show right now. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a collective fan thing.
Yeah.
That when it's fun, when we focus on the adventure aspect, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But then when we decide not to focus on that and focus on other things, we're like, this is incredibly uncomfortable.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
All I can say
extremely
is
creepy.
The one thing that I can say about it, though, is if you have to have some sort of plot line like that, and especially in anime, which I have not really watched enough anime where this is a huge concept where it's like you have some really like sexual harassment and like rapey kind of aspects to it. And again, I'm the unspoiled. I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
But if
commenters
this is,
keep a lid on
but
it.
Yeah. No spoilers.
But if this is the don't series share. That will show the progression to really villainize what that is and how wrong it is, and to really show the progression and growth of how this character overcomes that, like, I think it's good.
It had better pass the sexy lamp test.
Don't know what that is, but go on.
The sexy lamp test is, I think it was Kelly Sue DeConnick that came up with it. If you can replace your female character with a sexy lamp and the plot stays the exact same, you're a hack. So it better pass the sexy lamp test or I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm like trying to think like, well, was I like a lamp in that?
We're just saying you're bright.
Just imagining the lamp from the Christmas story.
Yeah.
Locked in a birdcage.
Yeah, no, I think she definitely does pass the test that way.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Good.
There's some real awkward moments.
Yeah.
But
we will see.
Oh,
it gets from what I hear, it gets worse. From what I hear, it gets worse. But again, it's unfortunate. But as we mentioned, you know, Asuna is a character with a lot of integrity. Is there anything from your own life or your own personal experiences that you drew from to kind of really bring into this role?
Well, it was very interesting that as Bryce and I, Bryce who voices Kirito, both of us are, he's married and I was engaged at the time. So definitely the romantic aspect of it I was able to like draw from because I have a significant other and I was like, oh, I can see where this is coming from. I've never been trapped in a game where if I died, I would be dead in real life. So I didn't know where to draw from as far as that goes. But I feel like any time that you're, I love playing characters that have a lot of integrity and like know what they want to do and will do anything to accomplish it without losing themselves. Mm-hmm. So I really respected and really loved playing that aspect of her. I loved all the stuff with Yui, even though I don't have a child. It's kind of nice to like have that that bond.
Well, every girl had played house and dolls and stuff. Yeah. You have that desire, you know, when you play make-believe with this boy that you have a crush on and he doesn't like girls yet, but you're like, we have a baby. This is a doll.
Yeah. This is great.
It's like that.
You have to pretend like you don't, like, this is not cool. I don't like that. But secretly, you're like, this is nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I guess any time anyone has a goal, and I do think that I'm a goal-oriented person, and I feel like Asuna has a lot of goals in the game, and she's like, she's a tough chick, but she's also well-rounded, and as far as a girl, I like that the show doesn't box in, like, a girl can only be pretty, like, a girl can also carry a sword and, like, save the guys, which I really enjoy that's where the show took it, so that's what I enjoyed playing, and though I might not have aspects for my life to draw from, I guess my parents did instill that girls can do anything guys can do if it's something they want to do. So I had that background, I guess.
All right. Yeah. Mm. Well, very few people have direct real world experience.
Yeah.
I have to ask a quick question though, because my whole thing with the last season that irked me, and again, just taking into consideration that this is probably their first love and they're teenagers and very young, but the thing that drove me insane personally was that she was developing into such a strong person. She's gotten out of her shell because of Kirito, but the whole thing about her just saying, well, if you're not around, I'll just die. I will kill myself.
Yeah.
Like that drove me insane about her, because I felt like as much as I can get that whole like loss kind of thing, as such a strong character that she had become, it was at that point where it was like, if anything, if he did die, you would want to live on for him because he fought so hard for you. And I thought that was the only thing that irked me. What was your take on that?
I think it totally is like a first love thing. Like it's the first guy that's ever been interested in you.
Stupid.
And it's like, you know, and they had the whole thing with the cabin, and they had all that time together where it was kind of an escape. And it was like a very real playing house situation. And I feel like that's something that a lot of teenagers say is like, if you go away or if we break up, like, I'll never be able to live on. Well, no, you won't. You won't be able to live in that world where your brain is at right now. You'll have to grow and mature and change. And I feel like if that did happen and if he was suddenly gone, I think she would be heartbroken and it would take her a little while to get over it. But I think that she's a strong enough character that's just something that you say, not to take away from how much she loves him. I totally believe that she absolutely does.
Yeah.
But I think she would rally and say, like, well, what would he want from me in this situation?
Yeah.
He wouldn't want me to give up.
Awesome.
So that's how I kind of took it while we were playing it.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
We like that. We like Asuna a lot, even though the story, you know, makes it a little irksome. But you do play a lot of characters with with a lot of integrity. And I'm wondering personally if there's any characters where you would like another crack at them, where you're like, that was so awesome, it was so much fun, I'd love to do it again.
I think there's this show in particular, I would love to go back and do more with her. I play Lucy in Fairy Tail, and we're still working on that show, and I love getting to play Lucy. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I'll be working on Sailor Moon, playing Sailor Venus, so that's another character that's just like a fun, like, that's an iconic show. It's going to be very exciting to work on. I honestly don't think that there's been a character where if somebody was like, well, we're doing more of this show, that I'd say, man, I'm over it. Because it's the frustrating thing about anime sometimes is you're limited to a 12 to 24 to 26 episode.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the cap. So once you get into the character and they're like, well, it's over now, you're like, oh, dang it. This is fun. This is a great family, and I love working with them. So any opportunity to go back. I worked on Bamboo Blade, and I remember that show as being a very, like, sweet character who was really, really awesome at Kendo, and I really missed that show. It would be really fun to get to go back and work on that. And she was like the tiniest person on the team and really like nobody suspected her to be so amazing, but she beat everyone.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool. So, nice.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sound like it'd be a lot of fun. But, you know, we looked back. Now looking forward, since we're running out of time, what upcoming projects are you really excited about?
Well, I'm super excited about Sailor Moon. That'll be a blast. Yeah.
So this is one of those things like, she is a 26-year-old woman, obviously.
Yeah.
Sailor Moon's a thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Saw it when I was a kid, and then when they were like, oh, you're going to be working on that, I found out that I was cast in Sailor Moon when I was driving to my rehearsal dinner for my wedding. So I was like, Sailor Moon is my wedding present.
That's a pretty good wedding present.
Yeah. It was awesome. And I did a film with Shane Dawson. I worked for the docuseries, The Chair on Stars. And so that film, Not Cool, will be coming out, I guess, sometime in September. I know it's premiering on Stars September 6th. I also did another film called Beyond the Farthest Star that's going to be out later this year. I'm working on a play that my husband wrote and will be producing in L.A. Then I did an animated film with Sean Astin and Tim Curry called Ribbit, and that will be
that's awesome.
Coming out later this year.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to say we are just about out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
Definitely.
To sit down and talk with us as we talked about these episodes. Where can people go if they want to find out more information about you?
I have a Facebook. You just search Cher Meili, and that is me. I'm also on Twitter at Cher Meili, and I think my Instagram is CLK Star. Because I love stars.
Well, thank you again so much for coming on.
Tari,
where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tari J. That's TauriJay. You can also find me on the Extant panel on Wednesdays and the Legend of Korra on Sundays with this lady.
Yeah, and I'm this lady. My name is Liz Rishmawi. And you guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Lizzie Maui. That's LizzyMawy. You can also find me on the Legend of Korra panel with these two guys.
Yeah.
And you can also find me on The Musketeers a little later after that.
I'm Katie Cullen. I'm one of the two guys.
Of four.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I'm also on Attack on Titan, Legend of Korra with these guys, and Ruby with this girl.
Yo. And I'm Megan. You can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I am also on the Attack on Titan panel and the Ruby panel, which is every other week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. We will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Ow.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.